Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, nationally syndicated out of San Francisco and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It's our pleasure to welcome to the show veteran English actor Jim Pittock. He has a new memoir coming out on the 23rd of next month called Caught With My Pants Down and Other Tales from a Life in Hollywood. Jim, welcome to the show. And I grew up in the Berkeley area, and I'm a fan of the Oakland A's. And that's something that you're not too unfamiliar with, are you?
I've been a lifelong A's fan. Well, I say lifelong. I moved over here when I was 24 years old, and I'm now a bit older than that. So I saw my first ever baseball game at the Oakland Coliseum in 1981. And being a loyal sort of person, I've stayed with them. And I've had a thoroughly enjoyable time seeing the ups and downs of the Oakland A's.
That's very cool. And over here in San Francisco, getting your start, your boy's own, playing a keeper, what was that like?
That's right. Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I'd been in the country just a few months, and I'd got the rights to this one-man show about a soccer goalie, and I managed to get someone to produce it in San Francisco after being turned down by everybody multiple times. And the show took off in a big way, and it really launched my career. And about a year later, I ended up, you know, being starring in a Broadway show. So it literally took me from zero to 10, I would say, in theater terms, which was a very happy intersection of sports and show business for me.
Now, we also have something in common with our love for soccer as well, and I became a huge Spurs man under Hoddle and Waddle and finally got to the lane in 1991, and just to see how they've grown. But at Selhurst Park, I know Crystal Palace, that's your team. And to me, I think about Righty and Brighty and those great teams, and then when Plough Lane became, what, Flats, Wimbledon came in and rented Selhurst Park for a while.
Yeah.
What is your connection with the Eagles there?
Well, I've supported them for over half a century. It's interesting you mentioned Righty and Brighty, because Mark is a good friend of mine, and I often watch games or see him at games. So I've supported them for a long time, and then in 1999 they went bust, and they were in administration, which is one step before liquidation. And I, along with a couple of other people, started the Crystal Palace Supporters Trust, which raised some money and some loans and some money, and we helped facilitate the purchase of a club. And then it's still in existence to this day, the Supporters Trust. And that model of Supporters Trust that we created actually became the standard model in Europe and United Kingdom, which I'm very proud of, actually. And the brochure for that ended up in the Football Hall of Fame. So I've actually in the Football Hall of Fame, even though I don't have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
I think I'd rather have yours.
You can buy them for $50,000.
So. All right, let me ask you this. You're in South London walking down the street. On one side of the street is Gareth Southgate, but on the other side is Attilio Lombardo. Who do you talk to?
Oh, my God. You know your football. Wow. Probably Gareth, because I think I don't speak Italian. I'm a massive admirer of both men, as people, actually, as well as footballers. But I think I'd probably end up having more to talk to Gareth than Attilio, who is just a great, great footballer.
And being, the England skipper as well. Who is your favorite Crystal Palace player of all time?
Well, you mentioned him already. Question when people ask me that is Ian Wright. Mm-hmm. Ian Wright is the best player to have ever pulled on a Palace shirt. Now people say, oh, what about Wilfred Zaha? Wilf is a fantastic player. He's a fantastic player. And, you know, his legacy may end up being the greatest Palace player of all time. And he'll be remembered more of a Palace legend because of his lifelong association with the club, whereas Ian obviously went to Arsenal and then played for England. But I still, just in sheer terms of ability and excitement, I would say, and more than that, actually, sorry, ability, excitement, and end result, I would say that Ian Wright is the best player to have ever played for Crystal Palace.
Yes, and I don't even think those two belong in the same breath. It's definitely Wrighty. All right, and the other thing I wanted to ask you is the Crystal Palace, that was originally built in Hyde Park, right? And then it got moved, and then it burned down, and then they destroyed it because they thought the Germans would see it, and it would be a marker for it to be London, right?
Well, I didn't know that part. I knew that it burned down, and it was, you know, obviously a huge deal. It was an exhibition to sort of show off the empire, and it kind of put Crystal Palace, that area, on the map. It became a huge tourist destination. And then the fire happened. I think the fire happened actually after it had closed, but I could be wrong on that. But yeah, I mean, I actually drove past the site where it used to be quite recently, and it's a big park now.
A couple more questions for Jim Pittick. Caught With My Pants Down is his new memoir, and we'll get to that in a second. I still have more questions. As a guy from Kent, your, you know, footballing notions, you avoided the draw of the Liverpools and the Man United. So what was it about Crystal Palace? Like, how close to you maybe going to the Den and being a hooli with Millwall? I mean,
that's a great question. I mean, really, it was a triumvirate. I had a choice of Millwall, Charlton, or Crystal Palace. And they were all pretty much of a muchness at that time. And Crystal Palace sounded more exotic.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with them, and I liked their shirts better. That was really, it was an arbitrary choice. In fact, yeah, my first game was Charlton v Crystal Palace. So the first ground I ever went to with my father was Charlton Athletic. But yeah, I mean, it was Palace for me. And once you make that choice, you know, you're stuck with it.
Yeah, and I like it that our baseball team is the A's and not the Latics.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of the Latics. But I just have one more Kent question for you as someone who's been there many times. Why is Tunbridge Wells with an O, I mean, with a U, and then Tunbridge is with an O? Does anyone know that?
Yeah, I'm going to plead the fifth on that. I have absolutely no idea, actually. I've no idea. My sister lives in Tonbridge, and I have lots of friends who live in Tunbridge Wells. I couldn't tell you. It's a very odd thing. But then, you know, a lot of English stuff. Why do they spell Magdalen College in Oxford and call it Magdalen? You know what I mean? Please explain that to me.
Well, I remember one time in Cornwall, I didn't realize that Mousehole was Mousil. You know,
exactly. It's insane. And St. John is St. John. I mean, are you drunk? I mean, is that because no one could say it without being drunk? I mean, it's ridiculous.
All right, Caught With My Pants Down, that seems like it'd be some sort of tawdry book with, tales of ribaldry. What's going on with that title?
Well, of course it is. it's kind of metaphorical because my entire career, sometimes I feel like I got caught with my pants down. It actually is based on two stories that come up in the book, one very specific one, where I literally get caught with my pants down in an extraordinarily embarrassing situation in public. And so that really became the title. But then I thought it was a really good metaphor for my kind of whole life in Hollywood, which has been spectacularly wonderful. But I've never taken myself particularly seriously. I've also been, I started out in theater and was in Noises Off, which is a farce, a very well-known farce with people's pants falling down all the time. So it just felt like a fun, catchy title. As a sort of banner for the book.
Why is it? Because whenever I'm in the West End, I don't want to see Les Mis or Phantom, and there's nothing wrong with those, but I want to see farce because you guys just do it much, much better. And we've had attempts at farce over here, and we're a funny lot as well. But why is it that only in the West End do you get real farce?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, some of them are dreadful. Some of them are really cheesy. But it is a kind of tradition. It goes back to music hall, really, and vaudeville, which my grandfather and great-grandfather were in, and a physical comedy. And, of course, you know, it came here and first with the silent movies and Chaplin and Buster Keaton and all those people. That's essentially physical comedy slash farce. I don't know. It is a real tradition of doors opening, doors closing, people hiding in closets, people's pants falling down. I'm not sure. Maybe Americans have too much comedic taste. I don't know. I agree with you. And I think the point is about musicals is you can see them anywhere. You can see them on Broadway. You can see them on tour. And if you go to the West End, I mean, I tend to agree. I go for straight plays or comedies or things that I can't see anywhere else.
When you were growing up, did you ever do Christmas pantos like Dick Whittington or any of that?
I did. I did. One of the last shows I did in England was I played one of the henchmen and the broker's men. It was Jack and the Beanstalk, and I was part of the comedy duo. And I remember we had three shows on Boxing Day, which, for American listeners is the day after Christmas, mm-hmm. 2, 5, and 8, and you have no time to eat. So we're literally eating in the wings. And I remember coming on for an entrance with a mouthful of food and literally spitting out the food as I said my line because you just had no time to eat. It was mental.
Any kiss and tell, or do we have to buy the book?
There is some kiss and tell. That I'm generally quite positive and effusive. The one thing I'll say about the book is it's incredibly honest. I didn't hold anything back. I'm 65 years old, and I don't really care. I would never have written this book when I was starting out, because I'd be worried about working again. Mm. I eviscerate 3 people in the book, absolutely eviscerate them, and in comedic ways as well. 2 of them are very well-known people, very, very well-known. 1 is dead, so they can't sue me. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, yes, there is a chapter which I list 10 A-listers that I've worked to, major, major stars, 9 of whom I loved, and 1 was a 4-asterisk word, and I reveal in great detail who that was. So, and there's also someone else I eviscerate in another chapter. But there's a lot of backstage stuff. There's a lot of, it's a real kind of pulling the curtain back, actually, in a way that I think some of the major sort of memoirs you see from big stars, they tend to be a bit cagey about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't, and that may be my downfall. I may never work again, but I'm at a point now where I'm like, really? You know, I don't
think. Yeah. We just have
I think it's an entertaining read. It's very, very lighthearted mostly. There's a couple of very emotional chapters, and it's a very easy read. That's what people have told me, and I've got some lovely endorsements from various celebrities. So I think people will enjoy it.
Great endorsements all round. Called Caught with My Pants Down and Other Tales from a Life in Hollywood from our guest Jim Pittock comes out March 23rd. A large percentage of the profits will be donated to BAFTA's Access for All programs in the U.S. and the Palace for Life Foundation in the United Kingdom. We love you in the Christopher Guest movies. Jim, great to come on. Great to talk a little soccer with you as well, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you mentioning the charities.